The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. So, I always want to say it's nice to be here. I can't help it. Because it is. It's nice to be here. So, not too long ago, but you know, it seems like almost another lifetime ago, another like a parallel universe in some way, I went to the movies. Yes, actually, now that I think about it, this was maybe a few years ago now. But I went to the movies with a friend of mine. I hadn't been to the movies with this person. And we watched a movie that I probably wouldn't have seen on my own accord, but in the spirit of, you know, we're going to the movies. And it was an action movie, and it included a lot of profanity by the characters, a lot of swearing. And I discovered that when we had left the movie, you know, afterwards, just talking like, oh, what did you think about it? How was it? I was amazed how many four-letter words just fell out of my mouth. I was cussing up a storm. I couldn't believe it. So just this recognition that the environment we're in, that what we are being exposed to and what we're experiencing has an impact, affects us. Of course it does. And how can it not? And, you know, are we allowing things to impact us or affect us in a way that are supportive and that are going in the way that we would like them to? So this is generally called conditionality, this idea that things happen dependent on a number of conditions. I was cussing after the movie. I wasn't cussing before the movie. Kind of like the conditions of just, you know, they have these surround sound and you just get immersed in the movie, created the conditions for me to come out and to be cussing a lot. So conditionality we can use it as a perspective or a reference that we can use to view our experiences. That is, we can use it as a way to recognize the connection, like, oh, okay, I'm feeling this way because this happened earlier. And this recognition can help guide us towards more freedom. It can help us to become more sensitive to, okay, there's a little bit less freedom here. What are the conditions? What was happening right before then that made me feel like there's this contraction or this tightness? This recognition that nothing happens out of thin air. Things aren't random. Even though we might feel like they're random, we might not see the connections, we might not understand the connections, but there isn't a magic. I know I remember when I was young, I had this idea that, like, when I lost something, and I remember being young and, like, losing scissors. I don't know what happened to them. And there was probably some bad consequences of my losing the scissors is why I remember it. But I just had this idea, oh, poof, they just disappeared. They don't exist anymore. And it wasn't until later I realized, oh no, it's not that they don't exist anymore, it's just that I don't know where they are. So I had this kind of like this magical thinking that things just went away. Things just don't go away, right, magically. But things arise and disappear due to conditions. And of course, many of you will be familiar with this, that the Buddha summarized this, kind of this key teaching with when this is, that comes to be. Pretty straightforward. And then, of course, that's true when this isn't, that doesn't come to be. So certain things arise when certain other things arise. When there are rain clouds and other atmospheric conditions, it rains. If there are no rain clouds, it doesn't rain. So this flow of conditions is orderly. It has a, there's a kind of like a force, a law to it. It's not random, as I said. But we don't need Buddhist teachings to tell us this. We all have this experience. We all know that if we are tired and hungry and perhaps running late, our response to dropping our phone or forgetting our phone is different when we're not tired and hungry or running late, or when we stub our toe is different when we are tired and hungry. Everything is different when we're tired and hungry and running late than when we're not. Our capacity to be with the experience is different, and our responses to that are different. So feeling stressed makes it more likely that our responses will not reflect our best selves. So this is really obvious. We all know this. You don't need me to tell you this. But it is worth reflecting upon. We are always creating conditions for something to arise. We are always creating conditions. There's consequences to our actions. So when we find ourselves perhaps not taking good care of ourselves, or maybe gossiping or blaming others, we're creating the conditions for particular outcomes. Maybe we don't know exactly what those outcomes are, but we do know that those outcomes are different than if we were taking care of ourselves, eating well, sleeping well, exercising, all these things that we know are good to do. If we aren't gossiping or blaming others or filling our minds with ill will or harmful things, harmful thoughts. So, of course, understanding this conditionality can support this path to greater freedom and greater ease. For example, how we might create the conditions for a regular meditation practice. I know some people that they send each other a text message. Okay, I'm going to sit now. Okay. You know, I don't. As far as I know, there isn't, you know, long sentences or anything like this, but just kind of the support of knowing that other people are going to be meditating. Or putting a meditation in our calendar, or creating a space, whether it's indoors or whether it's in a park-like setting in our backyard where it's nice to meditate. Create a place that's like inviting, encouraging us to meditate. All these things that we can do that create the conditions and which makes it easier to meditate, which make it easier to do whatever it is that we want to do. I know for me, I have these, it's a little bit silly, but I have these socks that I really like. I have a couple of pairs and they're all brightly colored. And there's something a little bit endearing about them, that the pairs, there's one that has an R on it and one that has an L on it. And I don't know why, I just get a kick out of this. So I put these socks near my walking shoes just to remind me to go for a hike, go for a walk. It just makes it more likely that I'm up to do it because I get to wear these socks that I think are kind of fun in some kind of way. So what are some of the things that you might do, some of the conditions that you'll put in place? As opposed to this idea that I must make myself in some kind of way do something. Instead, what are the things, the different supports that you can put into place that makes it more likely, incredibly more likely, that something will happen? as opposed to this feeling like I have to end this suffering that can feel constricting and take so much responsibility. And I'm sure you've all noticed there are only so many things that we actually can control, if anything. So this idea that we're going to end this suffering, this difficulty, or make it go away, usually just ends up in frustration and maybe a sense of constriction and disappointment in ourselves. We don't directly control the elements of the universe, but we can create conditions in which makes more outcomes likely. It's a different way to consider how we want our life to unfold, how we want things to unfold, instead of insisting or badgering or pushing. It's like, okay, so what are the conditions? And there might be a myriad, a whole mixture of conditions that we might be able to put into place. And for some people, their difficulties, their suffering are a mystery to them. They're not sure why it's happening. Or maybe it's they don't want to look at their difficulties. They're afraid that they won't be able to handle it. Or maybe we're emotionally bound up with our experience and our difficulties. And it doesn't even occur to us to inquire, how did I get here? In a way that isn't blaming, in a way that it isn't creating fuel for anger, but kind of unpacking a little bit, what are the conditions that led to this difficulty, this suffering? What's underneath it? What's fueling it? What's supporting it? And sometimes it's difficult to see. What is it that that we're doing that's supporting this suffering? It might be really subtle. It might not be obvious. Of course, this is where having a quiet mind can help. Maybe it is subtle and only becomes apparent when we've settled down and our mind is a little bit more or less busy, let's say that. But it also may just be a habit of the mind that we're so accustomed to that we don't see it because we just feel like, oh, that's just the way it is. That's the nature of the universe, that the habit of mind might be something like, the world is an unsafe place, and we have this belief that doesn't matter where we go or what we do, it's always unsafe. Not recognizing or that there are some times in which we feel safe. Some conditions in which we do, maybe with certain people or with certain blankets or whatever it might be. Certain settings, certain locations, while listening to certain music, while meditating, whatever it might be. But we might have this underlying belief that the world is an unsafe place, and not only do we have that belief, but do we somehow believe it? We are holding on to it. And so that the consequence, the effect of that, leads to our feeling unease and maybe having to feel like we have to be vigilant all the time, noticing. So what might be underneath, what might be creating the conditions for our suffering might be something that maybe takes some opening and some quieting to be able to see. But even if we don't see or don't understand, one thing that the Buddha points to is that chances are that it involves some holding on, some grasping, some clinging, some attachment, in a way that doesn't allow things to flow naturally, doesn't allow things to shift and change, in a way that everything wants to shift and change, but our holding on to them makes it seem like it's always constant and the suffering is there's a big black box. So we are often looking in the wrong places for our suffering. We often look elsewhere and we're blaming other people and or blaming institutions. And to be sure, there are people and institutions that are doing oppression and wrongdoing. But we can make this distinction between pain and injustice and our continual suffering, which involves a holding on, a clinging, or some tightness. I don't want to make it sound like we're responsible for all the difficulties in our lives. I want to encourage us to look at what role do we have? Because therein lies some of the doorways to freedom. Recognizing that there are conditions that lead to greater contraction and suffering, and there are conditions that lead to greater freedom, openness, ease. And a big part of Buddhist practice, a big part of meditation practice, is discovering what are those conditions that lead to greater freedom, and what are those ones that lead to greater suffering. And in this way, there's a sense of maybe some openness or some possibility and not feeling stuck, which of course is its own sense of suffering. So there's a way in which we can bring attention and care to our difficulties and in an upright way to look at them honestly, without self-pity, without blame, and just to see what's underneath. Is there something that's fueling it? Is there a way in which there can be some greater freedom, some greater ease, a movement in that direction, so that we can understand? And we look at this and we inquire, not so that we can suffer better, but just so that we can understand how it arises, recognizing that when this arises, that arises. If this doesn't arise, that doesn't arise. If we want the suffering to not arise, what are some of the things underneath it? Is there a tightening? Is there a drivenness? Is there a compulsion? Is there some holding on underneath it? Becoming free of quarrels, becoming free of conflicts, is a frequent theme in the Buddha's teachings. In some discourses, he applies this principle of conditionality to describe conditions that are present when for interpersonal conflicts. In one discourse, he says that it begins with sense contact, that is, you know, eyes seeing objects, and the body feeling forms, and the ear hearing sounds, and the nose smelling odors, and the tongue tasting flavors, and the mind thinking thoughts. It all starts there. And then, as a consequence of some of our sense doors being impinged by sense objects, there's feeling tone. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant. Based on that pleasantness or unpleasantness, there's perceptions that arise, some labels that get assigned. Based on those perceptions, there's some thoughts that arise. And then those thoughts start to proliferate. There's a thought train that happens. And sometimes we might not even notice that maybe because we are uncomfortably hot, feeling like there's a lot of heat, and we just have this wish that we want to go into a place that's cooler, we may not notice how that is really influence our experience of listening to somebody speak. We might be thinking that what they're saying isn't worth listening to, not recognizing that actually we just are feeling uncomfortable and really want to go outside where it's cooler. But instead, we're just thinking like, oh, what this person is saying isn't worth listening to, or they don't know what they're talking about, or I may as well just go outside. And not recognize that little pressure, that little push towards leaning towards that the discomfort might have. And perhaps if we had heard the exact same thing in the conditions, and maybe when the outside, when the temperature's lovely and we can see the stars and we're strolling, we might have a completely different response. So we might not think of, when we think about the origin or the way that conflicts arise or quarrels arise, is starting with sense contact. But I guess technically, if you think about it, where else would they begin except with our experience? And so this points to that when we want to look to what's underlying some difficulties is maybe to look broadly, as opposed to looking for a specific cause as to what's what the dispute is about. If we look for conditions, we would look at maybe a whole bunch of things. Whether we had eaten or not, that may not be the cause for being angry. Maybe they did say something that was upsetting, but how we were feeling, our mood. Maybe we had just had a difficult conversation with somebody else and we were feeling tender. Or maybe we are feeling hungry, or maybe we just had a loving session, or maybe had a nice walk with our dog, or a loving session with our partner. So this idea of conditions is broader than looking for causes. And it doesn't require that we have to like pin down precisely. But you can just have a sense of a hunch. Oh yeah, okay, this is a condition that I know it contributed to it. I can take care and just recognize that when I'm tired and hungry, I'm going to not bring my wisest self, my most compassionate self, my most patient self. So we can intentionally create conditions for greater ease and greater freedom. And as I said in the guided meditation, that all of our actions have consequences, including our subtle mental actions and our large, gross behavioral actions, things we say, things we do. But also implicit in this is that we have the capacity to make a difference. We do have the capability to effect change. This, of course, is different than controlling everything. But we can affect change by putting things in the conditions in place that things are more likely to happen. And part of the teachings is to see ourselves as someone who has a certain effectiveness, of course, right? We wouldn't even be on this path of cultivation, this path of development, if there we had no agency or no efficacy. But part of the teachings is to see ourselves as having the capacity to walk this path to greater freedom, greater ease, less suffering, all the way to the ending of suffering. And so part of meditation practice is for allow the mind to settle, the body to settle, so that we can see the more subtle ways, the quiet ways, maybe the ways that aren't obvious, that we don't know about, we don't understand yet, or haven't tuned into yet. The way that we can become more and more sensitive to that, oh yeah, this movement of the mind leads to a little bit more tightening. This movement of the mind leads to a little bit more spaciousness and ease. So meditation practice helps us to see it in the subtle ways, and we can see this in large ways just in our daily life. And then we can gently inquire, what is it that is supporting or fueling some tightness or difficulty that we're experiencing? Maybe during meditation we feel some tightness, maybe in the heart, or maybe some pressure of the thoughts to be thinking. We can do a gentle inquiry. What's underneath this? What's fueling it? There might be some emotions. What's creating the conditions for this to arise? And then, of course, implicit in this, that we have the capacity to effect change, is that we can intentionally develop positive mind states with specific practices. So mindfulness meditation can quiet the mind and help us to see perhaps some subtleness that we might not have seen or be aware of. But we can do loving kindness practice. Soften the heart, get acquainted with the heart, have gained some easy access to warm-heartedness. We could practice generosity, generosity in terms of giving people the benefit of the doubt, or generosity in giving our time and resources. We can cultivate some compassion of meeting suffering with some wish for it to be alleviated, but without getting drawn into it in a way that's not helpful, but instead to keep our uprightness and sincerity and warm-heartedness when we meet with suffering, including compassion for ourselves. So this simple teaching, when this arises, that arises. Imasmim sati idam hoti. When this doesn't arise, that doesn't arise. Imasmim asati idam na hoti. Actually, the English that I said doesn't match that Pali exactly. But that idea, when this is, that is. When that isn't, that isn't. Or when this isn't, that isn't. I think you understand. So may we put in place the conditions that we may have greater ease and greater peace, greater freedom, an end of suffering. And may we also put in place so that others can have greater ease, greater freedom, and greater suffering. Sorry, less suffering, greater freedom and ease. This understanding of conditionality, may we put in place things that are supportive for everybody we come in contact with, and may it ripple out from there. May this teaching not be just for ourselves, but for how we show up in the world and how we affect others. Thank you.